Erev Teves, we know today is a fast day because of the siege that was placed around Yerushalayim. We spoke on Friday about the different malchioses that controlled Eretz Yisrael, Bavel, Paras Madai, Yavon, and Rome, the Romans. The first base of Midrash was destroyed by Bavel, and the beginning of that process began when Bavel came and surrounded Yerushalayim. And when Bavel came and surrounded Yerushalayim, we commemorate that tragedy with Asara B'Teves. But when you look in Maseches Sofrim and other places, so you see that it's not only Asara B'Teves that was supposed to be a fast day. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch itself brings down towards the end of Hilchos Ta'anios, he brings down days that there's a minog to fast. Now, we don't fast on most of those days, but it's state in Shulchan Aruch, days that we're supposed to fast because of things that happened, tragedies that befell Klal Yisrael during this time. So, Ches, Tes, and Yud of Teves are all identified as days of fast. And we mentioned it in the very beginning of Slichos this morning. We mentioned in the first Slicha, the Acheni b'shmonebo, smolos v'yameinis, halo shloshtan kavati tanis, that I was koveya tanis for three things. What are the three things that are identified?
So,
Ches, first let's start with Ches, because it comes before Tes. Ches is that the Torah was translated into Yevonis, was translated into Greek. The initial translation of Torah into Greek was looked at as a tremendous tragedy. In fact, Chazal compared it to the Cheda Egel. And they instituted a fast day. It was looked at as a tremendous, tremendous tragedy. I know you're all wondering, like, what's so bad about translating the Torah? What, like, the Art Scrolls translation into English? Like, what's so bad about translating it into a foreign language? So we'll get there. We'll get there in a second. That's right. That's right. It was. But they ended up doing it, right? The day, the ninth day of Teves is the day Chazal, in the Slichos that we mentioned today, it says it was the day that Ezra Sofer passed away. It's true. Chazal in Masechta Sofrim say we don't know why. Some of the different Mepharshim try to explain why. All different, very fascinating suggestions of what happened on that day. Some suggestions that had something to do with the founder of Christianity. But we... What? No, why the ninth day is a fast day.
Died.
It doesn't say that in Chazal. It says that in the Slicha. But Chazal, in Maseches Sofrim, it just says that the ninth day we fast and we don't know why. That's how the Shulchan Aruch brings it down as well. There are different suggestions of why we're fasting that day. But in the Slichos that we mentioned this morning, it says it's because of the death of Ezra Sofer. That's what we'll assume for today. It's the death of Ezra Sofer. And the tenth day is the day of the Matsur, the siege around Yerushalayim. And the question is, what's the connection between all three of these things? They didn't happen in the same year. They happened across different time periods. Why are we fasting? What's the connection? That all three seem to be grouped together. We say that for three reasons I was koveya fast. It's almost as if nowadays we don't fast the 8th, 9th, and the 10th. So we fast on the 10th. But while we're fasting on the 10th, we keep in mind the fast of the 8th and the fast of the 9th. And the question is, why? What's the significance? What's the connection between these three things? And why are these three things, why are they connected? And why are we fasting regarding all of them? And to address this, I'd like to share with you in very broad terms, because he went into much greater detail, but I'd like to share with you some words from Moshe Shapiro, who Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who is probably being buried right now as we speak. The funeral started at 11 o'clock. There are probably a lot of Hasbadim. They're probably in the Beis HaKfaros right now. They might not have even gotten there yet. And he's being buried in Har Zeisim in Yerushalayim. And Rav Moshe Shapiro, in our generation, was one of the great masters of Kiruv. Now, his Kiruv wasn't in the sense that he stood on street corners putting tefillin on people, or he went to college campuses and he had Friday night eat and meet event Friday night in the college campus Hillel. Those are also important for certain contexts. But that wasn't his form of Kiruv. His form of Kiruv was Talmud Torah. He was an address that people turned to for some of the most perplexing questions that they had. He was a Hoge Deos. He was a real thinker and a real transmitter of the depths of Jewish Machshava, Jewish philosophy, Kabbalah, Machshava, all of the realms that have to do with Jewish thought and questions that people have. So he was a real master. He gave a shiur. He gave a very popular shiur on Thursday nights in Yerushalayim that hundreds of people attended. I myself went many times. It's changed locations over the years. It was in the Or Sameach Yeshiva for a while. He has lots of different. He has Kolim that he's in charge of. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he's given shir obviously in Gemara and has been a Magid shir for many years. But he's known to most people for his Machshava, and he was a special person. He was Waxman and our yeshiva was very close with him at certain points in his life, and it was a very takif person, a very strong personality, very passionate, very open person, and at the same time a real defender of tradition. So there are a lot of svarim have been put out of his teachings. I don't think he himself wrote anything. A lot of svarim have put out of his teachings, even those. Some of them he approved of more, and he wrote some beautiful haskamas, and some he approved of less, and he wrote haskamas that if you read between the lines, he's less excited about the sefer. So he was an enigmatic person and a special person, and since today is his Levi and his Kfura, so I want to share with you just in very broad strokes an idea that he had about the fast day today. The truth is that all of the Bria contains within it a shell and a fruit. Everything has an inside, a pnimius, a depth, and a chitzonius. We spoke about this on Friday a little bit, about the neshama. How a person has a neshama, obviously, and the neshama is the depth of who a person is. And the external part of a person that we see is not really the true them. We've pointed this out, I think, before, that a person, it's a cute idea, that a person will often say, I have a neshama. They identify with their body and they say, I have a neshama, when it's really the opposite. They really are their neshama and they have a body. It's who a person really is. And we oftentimes are trapped by the externals of things and don't always penetrate to the core of what something is. And the whole world is like that. Hashem created a world and a system of nature that hides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why he's called a Kel Mestater there, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hidden. And yet there's obviously so much more that goes on beneath the external that we see. And the greatest representation of that is Torah. Torah, it's amazing. If you teach biology to a little kid, so he uses one textbook, and if you are giving a PhD class on biology, you're obviously using a much more sophisticated textbook. And with Torah, everybody's learning the same text. The text of Torah, Torah Shebichsav, is learned by a young student just learning his Aleph Beis, and it's learned by the most advanced scholars. And that's because so much lies beneath the text. Rav Moshe Shapiro, actually, when he speaks, if you ever listen to a recording of him when he speaks, so he has very long pauses. He will say something and then pause for a very long time. Mid-sentence, he'll make a pause. And someone once asked him about the pauses, and I think he had a line that he's saying more in the pauses than he's saying in the words. And you have to be able, your ear has to be able to pick up on what he's trying to convey with his pauses when he pauses when he speaks. Torah is a great representation of this idea of something that there's so much deeper than what we read. And this, perhaps, is why the Tirgum into Yavan was such a catastrophic event. The Yavanim, the Greeks, were known, the Ramban takes Aristotle to task for this, the Greeks were known that they only believed in what they could prove. If you can't prove it to me, it's not true. I don't believe in things that are, oh, there's a depth here, you really have a neshama, really? Show me the neshama in a laboratory, or I don't believe that it exists. For the Greeks, everything was either provable or it's wrong. Now that obviously smacks of a tremendous amount of gaiva. What we think that we can understand everything, and if we can't figure something out, then it's wrong. I mean, how many times have you tried to understand a Rambam? You've come and said, like, Rebbe, there's a problem with the Rambam. And then we spend a few more minutes looking into it, and you realize, oh, I just totally misunderstood the Rambam. But you were so confident that you had the right shot and that there was a problem with the Rambam. Just like that happens to us, it happens to everything. It happens to modern science all the time. Modern science comes up with a theory and it becomes accepted. And then all of a sudden, 30 years later, a new study comes out and they realize, like, oh gosh, we've gotten it all wrong. They were so, so confident. In fact, 30 years ago, they were mocking anyone who didn't believe in what they were saying. Anyone who doesn't believe in it is Neanderthal and they're medieval and they have no appreciation for science and for modernity. And then all of a sudden, 20, 30 years later, when that theory is disproven, all of a sudden it's like, everyone knew that was wrong. This is now the MS from Sinai, and if anyone doesn't believe in this, so now they're the idiots. And that's just the way that the Greek perspective on things looks. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be scientific. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try to understand things deeply. But it means that there always needs to be a heavy dose. I was going to say a dose. But a heavy dose of modesty to realize that when we're speaking about God, we're speaking about the cosmos and trying to understand the world. So we will always be lacking because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinitely more knowledgeable and intelligent than we as mankind will ever be. And the Yevanim rejected that. If it can't be proven, they don't accept it. And unfortunately, you have a lot of people like that nowadays who they read like the latest scientific journal, and therefore they decide that's MS. And anything, if the Torah doesn't agree with them, the Torah is wrong because the Torah was a document written 200 years ago by, you know, people. It's a document from antiquity. And it's not something that's going to be able to hold up against scientific research, rigorous scientific research that's infallible. So, unfortunately, there are people with that type of perspective nowadays, and that's Yavon, that's Greece. To translate the Torah into Greek means taking something that has infinite amounts of wisdom, depth upon depth upon depth, and saying, this is the pshat. You know, the problem with translating something into English, a Hebrew term, is because as soon as you translate, you're being mefarish. And when you translate something, you lose part of the meaning. I mean, it's true with everything. It's true if you have feelings for a person. If you really, really love somebody and you try to write it in a sentence, you try to write it in a paragraph, so you cheapen it. Because the feelings are always going to be deeper than what you can write. Now, when it came to Torah, it needed to be written. Because we needed a physical form of it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his infinite wisdom, figured out a way to write all the depth into some words of Torah. And those words contain within them infinite amounts of depth. Translating it into English, there are words that can't be translated. What is a neshama? You're going to tell me neshama means a soul? That's what it means, a soul? That's the translation of neshama? That's the most cheapening word in the world. The neshama means so much more than a soul. But we don't have another word. So translating the Torah, first of all, is already a constriction of infinity. It's taking something that's infinite and constricting it and making it finite. But alachas kama v'kama when you do it into Greek. Because again, Greece and their culture and the Greek language represents the antithesis of Torah. That not that there's infinite wisdom behind this, but what you see is what is. And there's nothing deeper than the surface. And therefore, translating the Torah into Greece was the total constriction of Torah. And that, Moshe Shapiro argued, or tried to explain, is the whole yesod of Ches, Tes, and Yud. Ches, translating the Torah into Greece, was a constriction of something that's so much deeper. Ezra Sofer, the Gemara says in Megillah, that Ezra was Malachi. And who was Malachi? Malachi was the last of the Nevi'im. Right, he was the last of the Nevi'im. And therefore, the death of Ezra HaSofer was not just the death of a man whose name was Ezra, but it was the death of a man who represented Nevuah. And he was the end of Nevuah. And what is Nevuah? Nevuah is our link to the Dvar Hashem. It's our link to that source of infinity. Nevuah is our ability to tap into what's going on that's deeper in the world. To get those messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we lost that ability with the death of Ezra HaSofer. So there was also a certain constriction of the infinite. And the last is obviously the putting the Meitzar around Yerushalayim. Mitzrayim, we've spoken about this throughout the year. Mitzrayim is a lashon of Meitzar. A Meitzar, min haMeitzar karasika. A Meitzar means constriction. From a place of constriction. From a place of being stuck. That's what a meitzar is, a fence. When you want to surround something and keep it in, so you put a fence around it. That keeps it in. It's a meitzar. Mitzrayim was a meitzar. And leaving Mitzrayim was leaving the meitzarim, leaving the boundaries. When they put a meitzar around Yerushalayim, so it was taking Yerushalayim. If Torah, in terms of a document or a text, and it's obviously much more than that, those are cheapening words, Torah as an ideal and as a message as the Dvar Hashem. And the Navi as the person who represents the Dvar Hashem. What space represents Torah? Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, Lishkas HaGoz, as we spoke about also last week. So to take a Meitzar and to surround Yerushalayim, to prevent it from expressing itself, from constricting it, that was the beginning of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, all 3 days, Ches, Tes, and Yud, all reflect or all represent a constriction of something that is so much deeper and so much greater. And that, perhaps, is a little bit of a depth of what's going on Ches, Tes, and Yud. What is the fast day of Asar B'Teves, and how we are trying to obviously break out. Hotziya mi masger nafshi, let my soul break out of the constriction of the masger, of the constricting force, of that which tries to hold me in. All of us have a neshama, just to bring it into a Musar idea just for 30 seconds, because it's very important that we don't just learn things, but we also figure out how to make them relate back to ourselves. We are all living an existence of constriction. Our neshama is screaming at the top of its little lungs that it wants to get out, and it wants to reveal itself more, and it wants to take over your body and allow your body to be kadosh. And we are keeping our souls locked up inside our bodies. We don't want the soul to rule. We want the body to rule. And the way to misaken the fast day today, or the cause of the fast day, the way to misaken it is to allow those things that are constricted within us, allow them the opportunity to be expressed. Allow them to come out. Be the person you want to be. Live the life that you know you should be living. That's the greatest response to the Matsura on Yerushalayim. It's the greatest response to the cessation of Nevuah. And it's the greatest response to the translation of the Torah into Greek, is to allow the infinite to be expressed. I would want to just conclude by noting the connection between the losses of Ches, Tes, and Yud Teves and the death of Rav Moshe Shapiro. Just like on Ches, Tes, and Yud, there was a tremendous constriction of our access to the infinite. Nevuah reflects an ability to connect to that which is infinite, to the Dvar Hashem. Torah is a giloy of the Dvar Hashem, of that which is infinite in this finite world. Yerushalayim is a city that connects us to a deeper reality and to that which is infinite, and to Beis HaMikdash. And on Ches, Tes, and Yud, there was a constriction. We lost access to those points of infinite, of the infinity. So too, the death of a tzaddik, especially a tzaddik like Rav Moshe Shapiro, is a loss of connection to that which is infinite. He was the conduit for many of us to appreciate and to see the depths of Torah. And he connected us to that which is Nitzchi. And on these days, Ches, Tes, Yud, who passed away, I believe, on Tes Teves, buried today on Yud Teves. So we are experiencing a constriction and a loss of access to the infinite. His memory and the inspiration that he brought to so many people should stay with them for many, many years. He should be a Melech Yosher on the door. We know that there was also a terrorist attack today and a continued loss of life, and all of this is reflective of a lack of access to the infinite and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to the ore of Torah in Yerushalayim. So we daven, Misas Tzadikim is a kapara, should bring a real Yeshua to the door, and those who are inspired by him should continue for many years to be inspired by him.